When the sun stood high in my ancestors' eyes, a warrior sat on the earth with a smile. The rays reflected his frame, shadowing his profile. I was prepared to share my life with his mind and ability. The forest, plains, fires, all structured in community. The rules to raise a family traditionally. Now in 2004, what remains are the traces of that history. Blind as his compliments and commitments to me rolled off his tongue. My perfection was the foundation of his words. I was the one. His past was filled with loneliness and misery. Years of violence and neglect plague his memory. Drunken lessons formed his life. Knowledge of broken branches in a tree of questions. I asked, he would confess them. He believed and I believed we were above it. Fuck the past, he was safe with me and I loved it. But it leaked out a little as the pain came in trickles. I was caught in the middle of his pride and his riddles. He couldn't figure out, shouting with a shout. And I tried to understand as he pushed me to get them out. I was quick to recoup, I took the falls, finding nice posters for the holes in the walls. Too sick to stop the cycle, hammer this nail into.
You're listening to Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective on CITR 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from the unceded, ancestral, and current lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh peoples. Enjoy the song, Too Sick by Equal.
You're listening to Unceded Airwaves from CITR 101.9 FM. Dringwizi, Autumn Schnell, Vilji, Chief Jim Cooey, Janet Cooey, Jacqueline Cooey, Wade Schnell, Shay Deji. My name is Autumn. I am Gwich'in and Inuvialuit on my mother's side, and I was born and raised in Miskatchewskaigan, which is on Treaty 6 territory, and I lived there for the first 17 years of my life. And now I live here on unceded Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh lands, and I'm really grateful to be here. I feel grateful every single day that I get to learn on these lands. Is everybody else going to introduce themselves too?
Yeah, let's do it. I'm Steph. I'm a citizen of the Squamish Nation. My ancestral name is Kwetosowit. My mother is Vera Wood, Nepal. And my my grandmother is Lucille Nicholson, Nay Lewis. And born and raised on my own territories in what we would now maybe call North Van, if you want to.
You don't have to, though. And my name's Jamuna. I was born on Tsleil-Waututh territory, or Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh territory in North Vancouver. And my mother comes from Nepal. And my father was born in Australia. And my grandfather is Ukrainian. And my grandmother is Dene Métis from northern Saskatchewan. And yeah.
Amazing.
Okay.
Today we're going to talk about Growing Room, a literary festival, which is an annual festival hosted by Room magazine. And Room showcases writing and art by cis and trans women, trans men, two-spirit, and non-binary people. They try to showcase emerging writers, and Growing Room is a series of readings and workshops that goes until March 17th.
Yeah.
But first, we're going to talk about other things.
First, Autumn has a story for everybody.
And then Jamuna's going to read some things.
Yes, which is going to be so good.
Which is like a real life poetry reading.
Yes.
But without poetry and not by the author. But it's like, it's just as good. Yeah.
It's a reading. It's a tribute.
Yeah. And like, what book are you going to read from, Jamuna?
I've brought both Heartberries by Therese Marie Melhut. And that book just came out last year. And another book by Joy Harjo, Crazy Brave. And that one's a memoir. They're both memoirs, actually.
That's amazing.
Really great.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited.
I have never read either of them, although Heartberries has been on my list for a long time. So I'm really excited to hear what you are going to read from it, because it'll be like a little mental break from mm-hmm. like school readings. But first, I was at a show last night. I don't know how many of you listening were at No Name last night. No Name is one of my favorite artists. She's near and dear to my heart. But I was so mad. So I don't know. It was at the Commodore, which is a venue downtown. It's on Granville, if you have never been. And it's just, I don't know. You know when music is made for like a specific group of people, and mm-hmm. like you can tell?
Yeah.
That's exactly what was happening, and it was great. I love how No Name makes music about like colonialism and like the importance of talking about like Black lives and Black Lives Matter, etc. And then all these white girls with their like cishet boyfriends came, and they were so annoying. Like in front of me. So I don't know how many of you heard the song Self by No Name. Has anybody here heard that?
I haven't heard it.
No.
Okay, well, we're going to hear it. I think we should listen to it now.
Listen to it first.
For
the story.
Some context.
All right.
Also, content warning. There might be some strong language. It's a great song. You should listen to all of No Name's album, although there is strong language in it. But you should listen to it anyways.
Okay.
And we're going to.
Here we go. Song, then story.
Maybe this is an album you listen to in your car when you're driving home late at night, really questioning every guy, religion, Kanye bitches. Maybe this is an entrance before you get to the river, a heaven before the heathen, no reason for you to like me. Maybe this your wife, he just went in a clean divorce, the baby ain't really yours, it's really for baby's teeth and the chicken wings under season. Y'all really thought a bitch couldn't rap, huh? Maybe this your answer for that, a crack era, the Reagan administration that niggas are still scared of. No, actually, this is for me. This one for TT at the wake, serving the mac and the cheese. This one a small apology for all the calls that I screamed. Mr. Money Man, Mr. Everyday He Got Me, Mr. Wiping Me Down, Mr. Me Love, Mr. Miyagi, Miscellaneous, Mr. Molly inside my sake. Incredible, incredible emptiness in my body. Heaven's only 4 feet tall, I set my ringer to it. Fuck your rapper, homie, now his ass is making better music. My pussy teaching ninth grade English. My pussy wrote a thesis on colonialism in conversation with a marginal system in love with Jesus. And y'all still thought a bitch couldn't rap, huh? Maybe that's your answer for that. Good pussy. I know niggas only talk about money and good pussy.
Awesome. So that's Self by No Name. I really love that song personally.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's amazing, and it just like it said so much in a minute and 30 seconds.
Yeah.
But okay, so everybody close your eyes unless you're driving. But like imagine that you're closing your eyes. So that song is playing in the background, and like It's from the album Room 25, and that was in a neon sign in the back. And there was, like, it's not a mosh pit, but everybody's really close. They're, like, really tight packed in. And this white girl in front of you with her boyfriend just, like, is hitting people in the face because she's going so hard to it. And while that's happening, like, No Name very evidently says the N-word in the song, mm-hmm. which is, like, that's great. No Name, you do your thing. Every other person who identifies as black and is black, you do your thing. White mm-hmm. girls, don't ever say that word. Yeah. Not even if somebody else is rapping it.
Yeah.
So, like, just imagine. So there was me, and then there was her and her boyfriend directly in front of me. And then, like, right beside her was a woman of color. And she was, like, hitting that person in the face and, like, in the hair and, like, saying the N-word. And then the person beside her just, like, moved farther back. And I think that made me so mad because, like, this content isn't made for her. Mm-hmm. Why? Like, you can consume this. You should give No Name all of your money because she raps about pussies and colonialism. And that's all that I've ever wanted in my life. But, like, that content's also not made for me, except I think I'm aware of that. And, like, I want to consume it because it's great, but it's not made, like, for me by me.
Yeah.
You know? And, like, she was just so unaware of that. And then afterwards, her boyfriend came up to me and apologized. And I was like, it's fine. This is about your white girlfriend. And then he, like, tried to chase me down, and he kept screaming, like, what did you just say to me? And then he, like... He thought that my friend was me, so he, like, grabbed her shirt, and she told him not to touch her.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was just, like...
What did he do after he grabbed her shirt?
He just walked away, because she was like, don't ever touch me.
Wow.
And it's just, like, how could you be so unaware of your personal space and also, like, your vocabulary and what is important and what is not important in a space like that where it's, like, very obviously, like... by a black woman for black people, and I'm assuming for black women.
It is interesting to think how much depth was in that apology if he was so quick to kind of switch gears. And
yeah, it was just wild because it just reminded me that white people will always be white before they will be anything else. Oof. But also, like, I also understood that I had privilege in that situation because I'm, like, a lot whiter than the black woman that was beside me. Mm. And, like, that's why I said something, because if she said anything, like, she could have been physically harmed if he felt comfortable enough to grab my friend. Mm. And it just, like, it made me so mad because I think, like, you're allowed to consume content, but you shouldn't be literally overpowering the voices who this is made for, especially in a situation like that.
Yeah.
Or, like,
that seems more like a white people, you know, like, there's always ones in every group of anything, yeah. But they're making white people look bad. It's not that white people are like that. Most white people are pretty conscientious and aware of the appropriateness thing of certain things.
Yeah.
But that's too bad.
That's true.
That's too bad. It's the loudest ones, right?
Yeah.
The loudest, most obnoxious, violent ones.
And my friend was with me also, and she was a woman of color, and she was standing with some of her other friends. And, like, this white couple came late, and they were both just like, oh, sorry. And they were, like, stepping on her feet. And she was just, like, we were both so mad by the end because of just, like, the people who were there. Mm-hmm. And, like, it just reminded me of Princess Nokia. A few years ago, she played a show here, and she... like, literally said at the beginning, if you're a woman of color, move to the front. Mm-hmm. All the other white people, move to the back. Like, this isn't, you don't deserve the best seats for this.
This is a really interesting story, though, that I want to tell that relates.
Yeah.
When I was at Growing Room last year, and they had this really, really, really great talk about intersectional feminism. It was all women of color who were having the panel, and it was really great. And then I hadn't got a ticket ahead of time, and they actually had this moment before where there are a lot of people who wanted to get in, more people than could get in, mm-hmm. who were, like, waiting around. And so someone came out and was like, okay, we can let in, I think it was maybe 10 people, like, not that many for, like, 40 people waiting. They said, we'd like to prioritize any, like, woman of color first. So, like, please come to the front and we're going to let you in first. Mm-hmm. And I had been waiting there for a while, and I was like, I mean, I am Indigenous, but I am white passing. Mm-hmm. So I even was like, I don't even know what to do here. Like, because I, like,
you're like, this is
identify
hard.
This is, like, my family, but I also know that I've gone through life differently because mm-hmm. enough people have thought that I'm white, that I pass as white. And so I know that my life experience has been different. Mm-hmm. That was a weird moment.
Yeah.
I just wanted to share that story.
Yeah. That's fair.
Yeah.
I think it's hard, though, also, because, like, in that situation, it is different. But, like, mm-hmm. I would never say the N-word even though I'm
a BIPOC that's not person,
you know? Like, it's just in a situation like that where, like, you are so very obviously stepping over boundaries.
There was a really great talk by Sanahisi Coates that I was talking about before the show, and a woman stood up and she was like, my friend, she was a white woman, and she's like, my friends always say the N-word in songs. Like, what do I say to them? And he's like, well, yeah, you tell them to stop, because that's like, he's like, isn't there just one thing that you guys can't have? Is that how he said it?
Yeah.
And then he was saying, he's like, there's a bunch of them. He's like, you know, my wife and her girlfriend will be being like, bitch, please, to each other. And he's like, I know I can't enter that conversation and start saying that to my wife or her friend. That's just not, it's different when I say it.
Yeah. And like, I know that it wasn't all white people, but it was just like the amount that were there and were standing in the front. We're just like, I was so annoyed.
It is a kind of like know your surroundings kind of situation. You know, it's just that was a particularly meant to be like a decolonizing space. And so for that contrast to exist in that space probably felt like way more of an assault than if it had been at like a different situation.
Yeah. No, totally. That's right. That's very true.
So I was annoyed at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's lack of awareness.
Yeah. And like, I think that was something that I really appreciated about Growing Room was I felt like maybe, I don't know, I didn't go to all of the events, but I felt like in just like the way that the event was curated, it was just like they made you very aware of your space and like your positionality within that space, which is like, that's totally not on No Name and it's not on the curators, but I really appreciate that Growing Room had the capacity to include that.
For sure. Yeah. It's a positive, inclusive space. And yeah, and they make sure, like you said, everyone knows like their role in that, in that space. Yeah. On that note, I feel like I need something more positive. Tamuna, can you share some?
Oh, I didn't say that these were the most
positive. True, okay. But I won't feel good. I think you reading something good will be nice.
Okay, let me
Don't feel obliged to choose a positive passage.
I'll start with one that's... okay. Switching it up. Okay, so I'll start with Crazy Brave. And so Joy Harjo is actually, she's a singer as well as a poet. And you can find this book where she narrates the whole thing. And she'll like sing parts of this book.
That's amazing.
And I've heard it's quite an experience. But I read the book and just reading it is really beautiful.
Can you find the like, are there videos of her singing online? Or?
I believe there are. Okay. But I don't know for sure, and I wouldn't be able to tell you what to look.
You should also buy the book because they get royalties from it.
Yes.
Totally. Crazy Brave. So here is the first passage. My father told me that some voices are so true they can be used as weapons, can maneuver the weather and change time. He said that a voice that powerful could walk away from the singer if it was shamed. After my father left us, I learned that some voices could deceive you. There's a top layer and there's a bottom layer, and sometimes they don't match. My stepfather's voice had a top layer. It was jovial and witty and knew how to appeal to women. The bottom layer was belted with studded anger.
Wow.
That's so short but succinct.
Well, I love just, you know, this whole book. She is able to describe human experiences in a way that I think peels away layers of like, oh my gosh, you know, like, you know, just how she's talking about the voice and deceit and how, you know, this makes me think of what's going on right now with Jodie Wilson-Raybould.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, just thinking about, you know, that article, Steph, you mentioned before, by Emily Riddle about gaslighting that's happening with Jodie Wilson-Raybould, and you know, that's her opinion, but just to think about how you know, things can be said, you know, that sound like the right words, but there's a feeling under them that doesn't feel quite right, and that's the feeling of the situation, is some things are being said but it doesn't feel right. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think, girls?
Humans, friends,
you people.
What do you think? It gets really awkward here.
That's okay.
Yeah, you summed it up great. Uh-huh. That passage was beautiful. And I think that it can often be hard when you're feeling something as deep as something like deceit, you know, to be able to put it into words. And I feel like they did an amazing job of putting it into words there.
Also, I feel like this relates to Tina Fontaine as well, because it's recently been the 1 year anniversary since the trial. And like, that's very much how it. Like, I think that passage also just like resonated with me because of that. And I didn't thoroughly read the study, but I was circulating on Twitter recently about specifically the child welfare system in Winnipeg, and how they use Tina Fontaine as an example for that. And I think that just like thinking about all of that really, and like from that book, it really resonated with me, and like that's what it made me think of. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should I just like keep going with the passages, or what do you guys
think?
I
would love to hear at least another one.
Okay. Are you going to read from Heartberries?
I was going to read from Heartberries.
Because I just want to say, the cover of the book has strawberries on it, and your sweater also has strawberries on it.
Oh,
I love and I it. Don't know if you're aware of that, but you coordinated.
It was not.
Meant to be.
But, you know, this sweater was a last minute switch right before I walked out the doors.
So. It was fate.
Meant to be. Felt it.
Okay. Okay, so I'm going to read this passage. It's not exactly a light passage, but it's one that really stuck out to me when I read it. And yeah, maybe we can talk about it after. I killed a ladybug when we were walking, and you looked at me like I was wild. I'm the mother of your son. I don't think you know how poor I used to be, that my house was infested with ladybugs for so long. My brother and I went mad when they wouldn't stop biting. We tried to swat them with brooms and towels. We tried to corner them. Their death smelled like a puddle and wouldn't leave our home. My mother didn't come home when the bugs overtook the living room. She was working 3 days on and 3 days off, and in between that, she was with Larry, my sister's father, who resurfaced in her life 20 years too late, just in time for my mother's midlife crisis. I don't think you know how poor that made me feel, a squaw child. I kill ladybugs whenever I see them. I know that the woman you've loved wouldn't do that. They can consider those things lucky. So much of the world shames me.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's beautiful and sad and angry. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing.
It makes me think about, or the way that it kind of sat with me when I read it, was just to really just realize how different our lived experiences are. And we can be in the exact same situation and be experiencing and receiving that input in such a different way. And you just can't know what someone has been through. And something like ladybugs, you know, that's such a good example of something that people do see as lucky, you know, mm-hmm. in Western society, or, you know, I think a few cultures do see them as lucky. So how do we treat one another when anything could be, you know, that much of a trigger, that painful for someone? It makes me think about that.
Yeah.
It also, it made me think of how, like, judging someone can feel so easy, but you, like, actually have literally no idea about their life unless they've shared very specific details with you. Like, you'd never know that somebody grew up poor if they went to law school, or like you'd never know that ladybugs could mean different things to different people. But it's just like a little insignificant, like, close reading thing that like makes such a big difference. And like, yeah, I feel like that's what,
yeah, I mean yeah, just like the way that your childhood, your history, your own trauma or inherited trauma like manifests itself in like objects or like other life is really interesting. It really reminds me of this book I really liked called Soussignant by David Chiariandi. And it's kind of about his mother who came from the Caribbean here to Canada. And she was she grew up kind of like deprived of water, just like clean drinking water and not having enough. And as she gets like dementia, she kind of leaves her hands under the sink and has the water like run over her, and it runs over the sink and it like damages the floors, and people keep getting frustrated with her But to her, like, that one piece of her mind that she just remembers, like, that, you know, being in that place of being deprived of water and kind of just wanting to, like, feel it on her. I don't know. It just kind of reminds me of, it, for some reason, that came to my mind when you mentioned that. Just, like, you wouldn't think of, like, the tap water as meaning everything to someone and signifying where they came from, like the ladybugs.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I guess the biggest thing that I think I get from even just reading from, like, Indigenous women authors in particular is just, you know, that passage just really shows how we do need to have more compassion for one another in a way that's just completely, like, you don't need a reason why. Mm-hmm. There's probably a better way to say that. But
you don't need to justify yourself, I feel like, also.
Yeah.
Like, I always say that to people and they're like, oh, like, this is really upsetting to me. It's like, oh, okay. And then they, like, try to explain it to me. And it's like, you can if you want to, but you absolutely never have to justify yourself to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it upsets you, I just don't want to be a trigger to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that's so true. Yeah.
And there's that saying that's like, I'm not getting it right, but it's something like, be kind to everyone because everyone has fought an epic battle. Mm-hmm. So we just have to be a little bit more kind.
Yeah.
I want to read one more just because I feel like I wanted one that was a bit more uplifting.
Don't feel obliged.
Death asked for.
You don't have to. I am uplifted. You are here reading beautiful works. I am uplifted, even though I am also heavy at the same time.
Well, it's true. It can be both. Mm-hmm. I find it really empowering, even when the heavy stuff can be really empowering. Mm-hmm. Let me see. I'm picking between these two. Okay, I'm just. Try this one.
And this one's in Crazy Brave?
Oh, yeah. This one's back to Crazy Brave. And, yeah. Okay. It was the spirit of poetry who reached out and found me as I stood there at the doorway between panic and love. There are many such doorways in our lives. Some are small and hidden in the ordinary. Others are gaping and obvious, like the car wreck we walked away from, meeting someone and falling in love, or an earthquake followed by a tsunami. When we walk through them to the other side, everything changes.
I feel so bad because every time I'm just so, like, involved in it, I don't even
it's
have
over
anything.
Now.
I'm like, what?
No. That's it.
Yeah, okay, well, how come you wanted to choose that one?
I like thinking of experiences as doorways, even self-expression as doorways into possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I felt uplifted from just, like, the experience of that passage, so
it was a new doorway, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's, to me, it is always a nice thought to think change is, like, possible, or if anything, it's always, like, inevitable, and that can also be scary, but to me, the ideas of going through doorways, transitions, change, like, is also a kind of comforting feeling at the same time.
Yeah.
I think also that if you don't like your current situation, it can always change.
Yeah.
And, like, that's really nice to think of.
Yeah, totally. Exactly. Yeah.
Like, change can feel super scary and, like, impeding doom, but it can also feel like if you're living in that doom, it can feel like a breath of fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
And in both of these books, you know, it's like memoirs of like excerpts of their life. So they're not all inclusive. They just kind of go through, like, a particular time of their life. And it's kind of like they both have, like, a transformational kind of experience. They both grow through really difficult hardship. And so I like thinking of those particularly difficult times of life as being an opportunity for transformation and an opportunity to open you up to something that you wouldn't have seen on the other side. And so I feel like for both of them, they were able to find some sort of healing through their writing, and even through the process of writing their experiences, even when they are able to talk about the transformation that happened. I think that I feel like the writing aspect of both of these was also part of that transformation.
Yeah. Something that also reminds me of is all three of us got to witness at least one event in Indigenous Brilliance, which
we were all at the same one,
yes,
too.
Yes. Yeah. It was a full day of literal Indigenous Brilliance, amazing writers sharing their work. And there was one, she was like 63 or something, and her name is Yonina Curtin.
Yes.
And I was just so, I loved how she talked about she didn't start writing until she was 50. And so that's just another example of like your life can change, the way you express yourself can change. And she was saying it was like, it was kind of uplifting and sad where she said, she's like, I just wish I could be like young in this moment with like with this resurgence, but she's still a part of it and an amazing poet.
And also I really liked how she talked about writing as a means of finding herself, because I think people often see writing as frivolous, but writing can also be very transformative as an individual.
Totally.
And like even just documenting your feelings and your experiences and how they change over time can be really interesting to look back on.
Yeah. I was even looking back at some of my old writing from like 5-6 years ago, and it's weird. It's like a different person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could talk about writing a lot because I love it.
Yeah.
But it's interesting just to look at the different phases of writing. Like, oh, okay, so Heartberries. Actually, I read this last summer, and it re-inspired me into writing because the way that she writes it, she doesn't follow rules of how a book should be written. Mm-hmm. At least that's how I felt when I was reading it. I was like, oh my gosh, she's not following the rules.
You're like, wait, maybe I don't have to follow the rules.
This is possible.
You know, it's like, and it's not super obvious. Like, she does have grammar and stuff, but there's some way that she writes things that I'm like, oh gosh.
Can you name it or like, no?
I can't name it. Like, that's wish I could like tell you, because I'm only remembering right now that I felt like this after I read it.
And I feel like that just means that everybody who is listening should buy the book
and
read it
themselves.
Yeah,
you make me want to read it.
Yeah.
You make me want to read it.
It's a beautiful book. And, you know, she is a really, she's a scholar. She's a, she works at, she's from BC. She's from, I think she's from, I'm not even going to guess. It's somewhere around Chilliwack. But she works at the Institute of American Indian Arts as a, in the writing, creative writing faculty. So I think she's a professor. But yeah, I like how she decided to defy some of the rules.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah. Well, speaking of growing room and defying rules and stuff, we have some cool interviews that we can share with everybody too.
Yeah.
Yeah. We spoke to DJ Cookham.
And
Virago Nation.
Virago Nation.
Which is an Indigenous burlesque, and they opened up Growing Room for everybody. And a pretty
them
awesome
together,
night.
Which is amazing.
Yes. Cookham DJ'd their set and then also did her own set after. And it was pretty fun. I feel like DJ Cookham is a nice place to start, maybe. I don't
know.
Yeah. So, everybody, we did a very short, like, 5-minute interview with Cookham backstage. So, I think there's, like, kind of some background noise and stuff happening.
That's okay. It just sets the ambiance.
Exactly. All right. So here we go, everybody. DJ Cookham.
What's up? It's DJ Cookham. I'm still kind of deciding what I'm going to play. It's definitely going to be like some throwbacks, like Moomba Tony kind of vibes. Probably hip hop, lots of female hip hop artists I want to play, local and independent artists.
What has been your favorite set that you've ever played?
Oh, man. Favorite set, I think.
I know it's hard to just probably choose only one.
It is, but my favorite sets are the ones where I can just, like, go really, really hard. Yeah. Like, play, like, crazy EDM, trap, like, you know, kind of, like, hardcore trap, basically. The last time I think I played that kind of music was at the Babes on Babes in October. Oh, I went so hard. Like, I, you know, it was, like, pretty crazy. Like, dubstep, kind of, like, a little bit of everything. But, yeah, when I can go really, really hard, and I don't get to do that too much because I play events, like, hip-hop events and stuff, so.
Why does that, like, trap, like excite you so much?
I don't know. I just really like the beat and the bass and the way the drums are. I have no idea. Because it's kind of like... Like, I used to be really into, like, house music and EDM and stuff, and then I got into hip-hop, so when I listen to that stuff, it's kind of, like, a mix of both. It's, like, hip has a hip-hop vibe, but then that crazy, like, EDM vibe, too, so I think that's why I like it so much.
How did you get started in DJing?
Well, when? Yeah, I guess when I graduated film school in 2010... So I think 2011, I was able to buy DJ equipment and just kind of practice and teach myself. And it took like 3 years to figure it out like just the basics. And yeah, I was always just inspired by DJs because I was a big fan of like house music and that kind of scene when I was younger. So I was always inspired by the DJs that I've seen. So I wanted to be a DJ, and then finally I was like, I can actually be the DJ, you know, like I can actually do it. So I just taught myself for 3 years, and then I started getting gigs through my film networks. You know, I was like, hey, I'm a DJ now. They're like, sweet. And then it kind of just started from there. And I just, I got more into hip hop all of a sudden. and now that's like a lot what I do. It's definitely like different mixing in terms of like playing house music and hip hop. It's like a different mixing skills. But anyway, yeah. And I just, from there, I just kind of, now I just do it for work. Like it's a full time.
Did you go through a lot of DJ names?
Sorry?
Did you go through a lot of DJ names?
I went through two. Yeah. I mean, I did spend like 5 years even before I knew how to DJ. I was like, oh, what's my DJ name? Like, you know, I had all these like different names. My first DJ name was Anna Shay, which is basically my name, my first name backwards, but instead of Shy Shay.
Oh.
Yeah, which didn't really have like that much meaning. And then my nickname actually has been Cookum since I was 15.
Oh, wow.
People just call me that, like, and it means grandma in Cree, and it used to not like it because I don't, like, you know, I didn't want to be called grandma all the time, right? And then when I started DJing, and then one of my good friends, we did a show together, and I told him the story about the nickname, and then he just was like, you gotta be DJ Cookum, like, do it. And I was kind of like, I don't know, I've thought about it, it's kind of weird, but then I just went with it, and it's been great. Yeah.
Do you like it now?
Yeah, no, I love it, because people, like, native people are just like, yeah, that's so awesome.
It's such a good name.
People are still like, are you a grandma though? You know, I get questioned a lot. Sometimes I feel like I am. But yeah, and also people who don't know what it means, they think it means like cooking beats, like cook them up.
Really?
So there's like cook them. So it kind of like works either way. Yeah. It's pretty awesome.
Still a great persona.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cooking beats.
The question we've all been waiting for.
What is your favorite ice cream flavor?
Oh, I can't eat ice cream. I'm lactose intolerant.
Still have a favorite. You don't eat it as self-destruction.
What's
I
your
do.
Favorite, like vegan ice cream.
I like, oh yeah, there is non-dairy ice cream, so it's like usually a caramel fudge vanilla kind of one.
Those are so good.
Yeah.
And if it can't be ice cream, what's like your favorite treat that you can have without risking your bowels?
I guess that is, what is it? Cheesecake. or deep fried banana. You know when you go to Vietnamese places,
yeah.
You have like deep fried banana
ice
cream.
I love like mango with coconut rice.
Yeah.
Okay. At what like art or books or music or whatever are you excited about right now?
Especially for this festival.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited for tonight. It would be cool to hear from a lot of the authors that are involved and kind of get to know more of what they're doing and stuff.
Awesome.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, thanks so much.
For sure. Playtime tonight, home, but trying to stay my ground. Knowing I fall, I left your ass home alone. Hoping I call in. Sugar walls coming down, making skin stand. The hell, not true, absolute bother. Straight shot, shutter has been the nap, not dollar, 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 dollar. I met you last night, baby. Before you opened up your gap, I had respect for your lady.
So you just heard from DJ Cookum, as well as Stiff previously described it, one of her sick transitions. So I hope you enjoyed it. You should all stream DJ Cookum,
yes.
And go to DJ Cookum's shows. She was great. Mm-hmm. Her music was so good. Mm-hmm. I know people who left as soon as DJ Cookum was done because the rest of the DJs were bad and they were just there for DJ Cookum because she's so good.
Yeah, she is really good.
Isn't
and
she
I also
playing
just
tonight?
Is she playing tonight?
Nice.
Yeah, it's on my calendar, but I don't have my calendar in front of me.
Fair.
But
everybody look it up.
She playing tonight with she's playing with someone else.
Mm-hmm. Other people. Other humans.
At a place somewhere in town. You can look it up.
It looks like maybe I was trying to look it up. I can't find it. But yeah, she's so fun to watch. Like she's having a good time up there, but she's also just so chill and so cool.
Yeah. She was like, what's up? It's DJ Cookum.
Yes.
And I was like, yes, I love you already. We also have another interview from the All Indigenous Burlesque troupe that's around town and also around out of town because they travel all the time. Mm-hmm. But the two people that we heard from are Shane Sable and Sparkle Plenties. So I hope that you all enjoy this lovely interview. Did you find the DJ Cook'em thing?
No.
Okay.
All right. Maybe while we listen to this interview, Jamuna will find it.
Pizza and ice cream.
Ooh. Pizza party.
Is that your favorite food? Awesome.
Sorry?
Is that Overpriced Pizza your favorite food?
Well, I mean, I can't eat dairy, so it's all a lie.
Oh, but like, dairy, the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's if any news says they can eat cheese, is lying. Lying. It's not meant to be in our diet.
That's true. I love it so much, but it hates me.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no, I can't do it. No,
I guess
more.
Just whether you force it.
I just like to suffer through it, and yeah. Then, like, it was when I got, like, stomach migraines. I was like, oh, I guess this is all over for me.
Now.
Do the adult thing, whatever that is.
Would you two mind introducing yourselves however you would like?
I am Shane Sable. I'm the convening member of Virago Nation. I'm a Two-Spirit Gitsan artist.
I am Sparkle Plenty. I am a founding member of Virago Nation. I am Cree, Métis with mixed heritage, and I'm wearing a pizza outfit.
Beautiful. This is just for us, but yeah. Can you both share your pronouns?
Oh, yeah.
She or they?
Beautiful.
She, her, hers.
Beautiful. Okay.
So it's been a couple years, or 2 or 3 years, I guess, since...
Three.
Yeah. So what has that path been like?
We're making lots of faces. It's because it's been a complete whirlwind. We did not anticipate the pickup and the response at all. We were just doing this because it was important to us to just share our identity and our experience as burlesque performers, and thought that we had a really great message to share with other Indigenous femme identifying folks.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been, like, trying to surf an avalanche. We sort of anticipated that things would go, and that this would be, you know, well-received, but it's really exceeded any expectations or vision that we could have possibly had, so we're really grateful for that, but it has been a very crazy ride trying to keep up, because we do this outside of our normal work, and you know, we don't have staff or anything, so we do all of the booking, all of the creation and production and everything. So it's really nice when we can come to a festival and they've taken care of all the production and just bring us in and we can just do the art.
Yeah, I was wondering about, if there's such, like, high demand, how do you go about even, like, choosing what festivals, what events to go to?
So far, we've just been saying yes. is what it is. We are prioritizing Indigenous arts festivals and Indigenous communities, because this is why we decided to move forward with this work. Although, I mean, this month alone, we have like 5 gigs in 2 weeks, which is just, it's a lot on top of our regular life. So we're going to figure out, like, what our capacity and bandwidth is. And then also understanding, like, quality over quantity, for sure, so that we can put a lot of our energy into our art, and then also be able to create more work in terms of, like, our messaging and, like, how we can serve the community outside of just performing burlesque.
That was a full summary.
Yeah, that was really a good summary.
How do you all self-care through all of that?
Or you too, I guess.
I actually work in the downtown east side with Indigenous women who do sex work, and so burlesque in a lot of ways is my self-care.
Okay. Yeah, performing in a way is self-care for me too. I also like to complain. just in general, like, I like being busy, being tired, but it's just an outlet. Like, it's just for me to get that out there, and so it doesn't live inside of me. I'm truly inspired and motivated by this work, so that just keeps me going, and just knowing that there's been such a lovely response, primarily from Indigenous, like, femme identifying folks, like, it means everything to us, and that's what keeps us going.
And the arts community is really stepped up as well in big support. We've gotten an opportunity to perform in all kinds of places that you wouldn't normally see burlesque, and that's been really special.
I guess self-care too is smoking a lot of weed for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those anti-anxiety self-medications are so important.
Yeah.
And why burlesque? Why do you love this particular expression?
Well, I appreciate the political factor quite a bit. Anytime a woman gets paid to get naked, it's political. And I like to be naked and political, so here we are.
It's a beautiful combination.
It's the perfect combination.
I just like that you can do whatever you want with burlesque. Like, you can burlesque. Like, burlesque is a verb in a way. Like, I've always loved the satire and the humor side of it, and I like that you can incorporate humor and comedy with sexuality, because sex is fucking funny.
Yeah.
To me.
And that's been the case in lots of indigenous cultures pre-contact. Sexuality was a welcome and included part of the culture, and there's always a lot of humor around it.
This is unrelated, but I just saw a play called Kinnelik, These Sharp Tools, and it's like an Inuit performer. And yeah, she put on this this clown persona that is both like scary and funny. Like, she puts on this really freaky makeup and like balls in her cheeks, and then she just goes up and like humps everyone's faces. Pretty crazy.
That sounds amazing.
I love clowns. I fucking love like the way that they just basically hold a mirror up to like your insecurities and like things that you don't really appreciate about society, but just kind of accept and turn it up and put it in front of your face, and then you have to respond to that.
Clowning as therapy.
Yes.
Well, if not ice cream.
What is your favorite dessert?
Just one?
Or many. As many as you want.
I've been eating a lot of mochi lately. It's like squishy and it's dairy free and you can like eat like a lot of them and not feel bad, I think.
Because they don't give you the stomach migraines.
It's the stomach migraines that you don't get. Yeah, it's like, mochi, all of them. I love them.
My favorite dessert is more of a favorite in theory, because I've never actually had Indian ice cream.
Okay.
But it's a frothy dessert that's a little bit bitter, and I feel like that kind of speaks to my soul. and also how people receive me. So, one day.
Acquired taste. My, actually,
exactly.
I have a quick story. I was at like a conference up in Seashell, and they had like bowls of salmon eggs to just eat, and my dad kept calling it Indian bubblegum, and I'm like, this is awesome, Indian bubblegum, and we told my sister that it was Indian bubblegum, unbeknownst that it was actually fish eggs, so she cried when she found out that it was not bubblegum, but actually fish eggs, and it was hilarious. We laughed and laughed. Indian bubblegum.
That same thing happened to me. I'm from up north, and they just, like, fed us frozen fish eggs. One time when we were on the land and I had no idea, and they were just like, eat this, it's good. And I'm vegetarian and I also just hate fish. So I just put it in my mouth and I like vomited.
Oh no.
And the elders were like, ha, we found a weak one.
Speaking of indigenous humor.
Thank you so much for taking time to talk to Unseated Airwaves.
Yes, of course.
Oh, our pleasure.
Yeah.
Have a good show.
Thank you
so much. Thanks for chatting with us.
That was Virgo Nation.
Oh, yeah.
And Autumn.
Yeah, and Autumn and myself. And we were at the opening night for Growing Room. Festival still goes till March 17th, if you can make it out.
Yes. Very cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so found out that DJ Cookham plays every Thursday at the Gramble Room, 11 p.m. to 3 a.m.
That's awesome.
And I also, just in my searches, found that JBU the First Lady is putting on a show tomorrow night with Kimmortal. It's Kimmortal's album release at the Fox, so they will be there tomorrow. And was there something else? Oh, yeah. So there is another, there is an exploration of Brazilian resistance opening at Grunt Gallery tomorrow. That's Callie Spitzer. She's a indigenous photographer, does incredible work. Look her up on Instagram, on Facebook, Callie with a K, K-A-L-I, Spitzer, S-P-I-T-Z-E-R. And that'll be tomorrow at Grunt Gallery, 7 to 9 p.m. Check it out.
Yeah. And everyone who's a UBC student, right now there's a referendum and also voting for the AMS. And one of the things in the referendum is a fee for every student, 95 cents, that would go towards supporting the Indigenous Committee, Indigenous like student representation on campus and Indigenous services. And so you can vote yes in the referendum. I shouldn't choose sides, but you can vote yes.
It's like, well, that's not exactly impartial right there.
Yeah, that was not impartial. But come on, who would expect it unseated to be impartial on this?
That was great.
If you're going to vote no, yeah, just don't. You have two more days to vote. You can go to amsvoting.as.it.ubc.ca.
And remember to vote yes.
To vote yes. And that is impartial government information from Steph.
You've been listening to Unseated Airways.
Thanks so much. See you next time.
See ya.